Business Matters in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Do you want to learn how to tap into unprecedented opportunities in the food and drink industry? Then join our Higher Diploma in Food Product Innovation and Enterprise. This course is 100% online and co-funded by Donegal Local Enterprise Office. Visit lyit.ie for more information.
Hi, I'm Kieran O'Donnell and you're welcome to Business Matters. My guest this week is the founder and CEO of Junketure, Troy Armour. Junketure is a television fashion competition for secondary school students where participants design, create and model fashion made from recycled items. A native of Buncrana, now living in Derry, Troy is getting ready to relocate to Madrid with his wife and daughter for 6 months in January. Troy set up his first business, a technology company, in 1996. And while he's also been involved in a number of other commercial interests, almost all of his time, effort and energy has been channeled into Junketure, which he is planning to turn into a global enterprise. Junketure raised €860,000 in seed funding earlier this year at a valuation of €10.6 million, and the successful crowdfunding campaign would bring his total funding to €1.27 million.
Troy, you're very welcome to Business Matters.
Thanks, Kieran. Delighted to be with you today.
Troy, I was very struck by a statement you made about yourself in the Currency article recently, and it went like this. I was the 15-year-old smart creative kid who was an outsider, and Junketure is born of the ashes of that. A big statement to say about yourself. You might maybe delve and give me a wee bit of background into that sentence.
Well, that interview in the Currency is probably the first interview I ever did, right? And I think the thing that I was, one of the things I was getting at was one of the reasons that I didn't do interviews before was I thought nobody would want to hear from a creative geek kid at 15. And so that's why I always stayed in the shadows. But if I go back to growing up in Donegal, and it was a happy upbringing, don't get me wrong, right? But first thing I would say is resources weren't plentiful. It wasn't like the world we know today. There was very little stores or places that you could go. There wasn't these big shops that you could go or order online. So for someone who's creative, their really only outlet to items was the junk that was after food was eaten. And as kids growing up, you know, to paint, that was the inside of the cornflake box. It was the only place you could get paper as such. So what I say, we were natural recyclers. Like, it's hard to believe now that sustainability is such this big word, but in the 70s and 80s in Ireland, we were a natural, sustainable society. Things that came into our homes, and it wasn't just our home, every home was the same. And when I look back at that now, because it didn't actually come home to me at the time until, I think, about 15 years ago, I was in South America traveling, and I was in this home. We were eating dinner off these table mats, and the old woman was about 80 or something, and she only spoke Spanish, but she was making this big deal that I saw these table mats because she had made them, and she wanted the visitor in the house to see these table mats. And basically how they were made was she'd glued about 20 or 30 corks of wine bottles together and then sliced them. And it just brought it back to me that in Ireland 20 or 30 years ago, that's the kind of thing we did. And I suppose that's one of the big things that we try to bring into Junketure. Junketure is not about, you know, we're a sustainable company. We're more about sustainable education. So that was one part of that statement. The other part of that statement then really was around this idea as a creative young person. Number one, in school, they're looking for academia, right? So creativity comes second. And then when you're not a sporty person like I was, there's no outlet for you to really show off that creativity.
How frustrating was that not to be fit and not to be sporty growing up?
Do you know, we grow up as teenagers and we're kind of in a place where we don't tell people. But really, you carry it every day. So if you think of that kid that's last picked for a football team every day, that's like a form of rejection every day. And you go there and you know it's going to be you. And, you know, to hear people say, "Now you take him. No, we don't want him. You take him." And it's almost like you're going to be a goalpost. It's, you know, somebody told me recently, when I was chatting to somebody recently about it, and they said, "Must build massive resilience." And I said, "Actually, I never thought of it that way." It does, because you get this thick skin, because you have to. But the thing for me too was, and this is a global thing, this is not just in Ireland, There's so much social capital to be gained through sport and activities. It's not just the athleticism of it. You know, people are recognised in the street. Like, I mean, that's the captain of the football team. They have a tribe around them. They get celebrated for their skills. Their skills are held out as, you know, special. And so when you don't have those things, so what my life looked like then, I used to kick a ball 5 or 6 hours a day. It's hard to believe. Even though I was terrible at it, because I thought that I could get there, when in fact all I really needed was a sport that fitted my skills. And I describe Junketure now as a sport for creative kids. And even in my own team, they struggle sometimes at the start. You know, new people come in, they go, this is not sport, what are you on about? And I went, sports defined is where two or more people compete using a skill or talent. Like, you know, darts is a sport, and you're sitting with a pint glass in one hand and an arrow in the other. So Junketure for me, and I've said it, I used to say it years ago, it's Formula One for fashion, right? And if you look at Formula One tomorrow, on the outside, a guy's driving around in a car that they built. People are cheering on, people are watching at home, and people are diehard fans about it. And then there's people sitting at home going, kids going, I would love to be Lewis Hamilton in 10 years' time. But if Junketure was the same, it's kids are competing in outfits that they built. People are cheering on. And there are kids at home going, sometime I'm going to be one of those kids. The difference then that I say is, to get from there to Formula One takes so much money and luck. For Junketure, there's no money involved. It's free. And all you need is trash, which everybody's got. So one of the things about opening Junketure up to the world is, it's kids in Sao Paulo and Cape Town and India. The trash is everywhere. This will be their moment to shine. And it's funny now, actually, because we're chatting today, because a video came in to me this morning of this 8-year-old young fella in Abu Dhabi, because we've launched in Abu Dhabi, and we have a Junketure junior program too for under 12s. And it's just, they do it in the school themselves, where they make a headpiece or a handbag. And this 8-year-old made this headpiece, and it's, you know, it's like the ocean on his head. And he's talking about, and he's talking to video, right? And he's saying, you know, my friends, you know, this is my headpiece that I built for Junketure Junior or whatever, and it's got fish in it, and it's the ocean, and then it's got plastics. And we need to realise what plastics are doing. And here's an 8-year-old, you know, through this program, talking about waste, the oceans, things that are important to them. And it's great to see it.
Did you see yourself and that young person in the video?
You know what? I didn't, but when you say it now, it would have been the kind of person I was. I was always making stuff, and I did one art competition. I was the kind of person in an art competition, if there was three or four in the team, I went away and did it on my own, right? But you're right. That's what I would say.
Troy, you did a lot of things before you set up Junketure back in 2010. Can you talk me through maybe from secondary school up until the point where you decided to set up Junketure?
I did Leaving Cert and A-levels now. I did A-levels for a year, and I finished that when I was 18. I was 2 weeks away from going to Queen's University when I decided not to go, and part of that decision was I just thought it'd be more of the same. I was wrong. Now when I look back at it, I probably got a different outlook on education at that point. But at that point then, I associated education with a lot of negativity.
What sort of career guidance were you getting at that time?
It was all about accountancy. So it was all about numbers. Everything was about accountancy.
And what was that based on?
I was good at it. Don't get me wrong. I could do it, right? It came very simply to me. And even though I didn't go to college to do accountancy, that was what I'd applied to do. I took an accountancy apprenticeship, right? And so I took an accountancy apprenticeship, and a local guy called Joe Carlin started me in Bunkrana, and I worked with him for 3 years. And I would say it's still a foundation of a lot of the business knowledge that I have. I learned a massive amount there. And when I left there in 96, I set up a technology company at the time. Now, that, there was no history of that at all in my family or anything. I don't know where the spark came out of. I have numerous stories that I could tell you, but you know, somewhere along that journey, accountancy just wasn't for me. I was bored, and then I was making mistakes too. And I knew in the job I was making mistakes, which means you're not interested. And I see it in staff now myself. If the ones that are interested, you don't have to talk to them. So for me, it wasn't for me. I started the IT company in 96, and I still have it today, and I suppose...
Well, what was it like setting up an IT company 25 years ago?
Not a clue, Keir, honest to God. I still say to people, like, I was a hustler. You know, that's what it was about. It was a hustle. So it was month to month. God, when you think about it, it was mad. Days at the start, I couldn't even drive. And I used to go on the old Loxwelly buses, right, to clients, and get off the bus and walk up. And I remember one of my first clients was a guy, people remember him, Eunan Hegarty in Bridgend. He used to rent the TVs. And I used to get the bus from Buncrana to Bridgend, get out there at Harry Lewis and walk up the back. He was in Bonamine. But you know what, right? I think one of my educations in that was I got to meet business owners. So in 1999, then I landed in Killybegs quite by accident, down to meet somebody down there. And I remember going down going, God, this is an awful long journey. I'm not going to be coming back. But Killybegs became the home of my business for a long time. And, you know, I would have now, I'd be number one in the fishing industry in Ireland.
It was through the fishing industry, was it?
I fell into it. There was no big plan, to be honest with you. And then I met some incredible people down there, Martin Howley, Eamon McHugh, Evelyn Cassidy, people who saw something in what we were trying to do. I remember walking into Martin Howley one day, and you know, he had a big vision of what that industry could be, and infrastructure was holding them back. Like they used to have dial-up internet to keep it on all the time. It was costing £1,000 a month. I mean, me and him made a deal. If I put internet into the town, he would give me the £1,000 a month, but he wanted something faster. He wanted to go international, and he couldn't do it. God rest him now, because he was a great... I learned a massive amount from him. And suppose I got to learn then from CEOs like John McGuinness, you know, Eamon McHugh, these guys. And so they were running companies. I was listening all the time. And eventually then... You know, that led me to Dublin. So, like, I have clients all over Ireland now in Trojan. It's a boutique company, to be honest with you. But I built a good business there. It's solid. It's got a great recurring revenue and a great margin. We'd have 70% margin. It's kind of unheard of in the game. But we've stayed solid with those companies, and we've delivered. And, you know, my biggest client would be in multiple countries. And, you know, that then got me outside of Ireland and so on. So I learned a lot there, right?
And did that give you the confidence to try to develop into other areas of business?
I don't know where the spark came to go into others, to be honest with you. But, you know, the junketure happened as a hobby type thing. I mean, I ended up in music at one stage. The music thing happened because I met these six fellas from... They were starting a band and they needed a manager. And they saw what happened with Junketure, and they approached me and said, would I be the manager? And I said, guys, I know nothing about music, and I'll tell you even more.
But you were a hustler.
I'm tone deaf, right? That's true now, and I'm still... I have no clue at all. You could play a tune there and I wouldn't know what it is. And they kept at me, right? And I remember it was just before St. Patrick's Day in 2015. And I came home to Ali and I said, look, they've rang again, and I've said, I'll give it a go. And we set out on this journey. And I remember the first meeting we had together, we were sitting around this table, and they were school teachers. And I said, look, guys, there's no point in doing this part-time. Do it full-time. We're going to need money. And that time we kicked off Kickstarter. They hadn't heard of it either. Kickstarter, and I said, we're going to raise 50 grand. And I remember the youngest member of the band turned around to me and goes, do you realise, like, nobody's ever raised more than 5 grand for a band on that thing in Ireland? And I said, well, we need 50. That's the target. And if you think about it, there's 7 of us here. Divide it 7 ways. It's 7 grand a man. So if you do 5 and you do 5, I'll be happy enough. We'll get the other 2 from somewhere else. And, you know, we set out on that journey back then, and we raised the 50 grand in 30 days. But the band had something that I needed. And that was... It was an avenue into that license and media world that I didn't know anything about. So I learned a massive amount from them. And then people used to say to me, why are you doing it? But I'll give you an example. One night, I was lying at home on the couch, and I said, you know what? The White House have a St. Patrick's Day party every year. Right? I'm gonna find out how do you mail and find out who organises that. So I took on to mail, and I mailed the American Embassy in Ireland, and I mailed the Ambassador Anne Anderson. I remember her writing back, because she says, do you realise it's Christmas Eve? And I was like, well, I didn't think it was Christmas Eve. I was just sending you an email. And I mailed the White House. But one day the White House phoned me, right, on a Sunday. And I remember this woman came on. She says, you know, this is Jen here from the White House. And, hang on, is this for real? And Joe Biden was visiting Ireland that week. And she says, we want the band to come and play for Joe Biden. And I remember it was the day of the Brexit vote came in. And I got 15 or 20 minutes chatting to Joe about Brexit and all kinds of things. And it was great. But like, I would have never gotten that room if it wasn't for the fact the band was there. But it was the same. You know, I was here one night too. The same as this couch. I have a lot of stories sitting on this couch. But I mailed John Delaney. The time Ireland beat Bosnia to in the football, people are out cheering, going, we're going to the Euros. I'm sitting there going, you know what? They're going to need a song. So I mailed John Delaney that night. And I said, you're going to need a song for the Euros. I've got the boys to do it. And in fairness, he wrote back the next day. He said, come down and meet me. And 6 months later, we were in Paris with the boys, turning around with the Ireland team. And it was the best year's experience, I have to say. Now, I learned so much about that industry, the media industry, licensing music, promoting it, how gigs work and all that kind of stuff. And it's actually helped me really well now what I'm doing at the minute.
So is the moral of the story, Troy, if you don't ask, you don't get?
Oh, totally. You know, even 2 years into Junketure, like I was struggling with some of the stuff of it because I had a tech company.
Right. So if you just take me back, when was the light bulb moment for Junketure to make it a business and for you to invest most or nearly, if not all, of your energy into it?
2018 was a big moment for it. You know, in 2018, I basically walked away from everything that Junketure was to that point. Right? I believed I had reached the level in Ireland that it could be, and I was struggling in myself to figure out what to do with it. And I realised too that I couldn't be the hustler anymore. That actually I was the biggest stumbling block to growing that business beyond Ireland.
Why was that?
It was failing. On the outside it looked great and all, and it all worked.
Well, what changed?
In 2018, number one, I fired everybody.
How many did you fire?
Well, three people first.
Right.
Then I walked away from my biggest customer. I walked away from the production company. Walked away from my accountant at the time. I basically cleared the decks of everything, right? And I said I needed to start all over again.
It was a bold move.
There was a month of sitting around going, I'm on my own here now. And I mean, I was on my own. There wasn't anybody else. And there was fires then that had to be put out from all those decisions. But looking back, they were the right decisions. But at the time, so one of the things, and so I'll explain something else to you, right, to get this right. I realised I was the biggest problem, right? And to sort that out, I had to change absolutely everything. So I was aware of this entrepreneurship master's at MIT. And I knew that every year roughly 200 people applied and 50 or 60 people would get in. And I thought, you know what, I need to change my mindset. So I chatted to somebody who was already on that program, and I said, you know what, I'm going to apply for this, and I need to start all over again. So I went there, and one of the things that I learned there was this, is that the most crucial thing that you need to do is define your culture. And I had never done that. So I was hiring people. How would I expect them to know what I wanted if they didn't fit with what I thought this needed to be? So that was one of the biggest mistakes, right? The other one then was you need to have some sort of a strategy. You just can't hustle month to month. And as well as that too, you've everybody under pressure because they don't know what's coming next. So I went to MIT. I remember going to MIT. I remember getting accepted first. That was a big deal for me. And I went over there. And so basically it's 12 billionaires. It's peer-to-peer learning. It's not like a lecture type thing. And the whole idea is just to learn from their stories. So things that worked for them, things that didn't work, things that you get to focus on. So one of the big things that came out for me was this thing. I remember this lecture on why. And the guy stood up and he says, right, he looked for a box of Kleenex first. He put this Kleenex on the desk and everybody's looking at him and he says, you know, we're going to need this tonight because you're all going to cry. This was a nighttime lecture. And I'm sitting there going, what's this guy going to do? Right? So he goes, right, everybody comes to me and he says, so Troy, why this juncture? Right? And I go, I love fashion and love shows and all. And he just keeps asking the same question, but why? So then I go, oh, but I was always in fashion. But why? But why? And he keeps going, right? To eventually start crying. And you just realize why this is so important to you. And I remember at that moment, and I never thought of it to that moment, I went, because every kid on that stage is me. And that's why this is not going to die. And that's why this needs to be in every school in the world. And I remember coming out of that going, Jesus, I never actually realized why I've done this for 8 years. And, you know, one of the we went on through this semester, and I remember coming to the culture one, and this guy coming in, his name was Paul Allen. He'd come up with a company called Ancestry.com, was worth billions of dollars. And this guy now has an ordinary shirt and jeans. And if you saw him walk down the street tomorrow, you'd go, I don't know, anyway, it's a homeless guy, right? That's the way he wasn't even shaving. And he was talking about the culture of the company is the culture of the leader. Who is the leader? And he got us to sit down and distill down the things that were important to us. So, like, humility is a big thing for me in the company, right? At the end of the day, excellence always. And then I'm a risk taker. So if I don't define those things to people, how are they ever going to know how I would work or operate? So that when I came back was the first thing I did. And so how I interview people now, and I have 20, the team, there's 20 juncture, and the 20th person started 2 weeks ago. How I interview people now, I don't ask them for a CV at all. I show them the culture, and I said, look, before we start talking, I need you to read that document, right? And the document is 2 pages. The first page is about Liverpool Football Club, believe it or not. I'm a big Liverpool fan, right? Don't hold that against me. But there's 2 parts in that. One is, Shankly had this quote about socialism. And it's this thing, you know, where we play together, we win together, we eat together, we share together, we lose together. And that's a big thing for me. Whatever I'm doing, you're getting the same. It's not business class for me and coach for you. That's a big thing for me. So it's the same. The kids in Junkature, they're the same level as us. You'll never walk alone. Go back to the kid who's the outsider at school. You'll never walk alone. And so that's part of that. Then it's this, you know, I believe if you're going to do something, you have to do it right. You don't do it 50%. So I ask these people, do you fit with this? Because if you don't, we're better to get this out now, because in 3 months' time, we're going to have an awkward conversation.
And there, we'll take a break.
Business Matters, in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Accelerate your workforce by enrolling them in one of our lifelong learning courses today. Visit lyit.ie for more information. LYIT Faculty of Business, designed by industry, delivered by experts.
You're welcome back. Before the break, Troy talked about his rather unique way of recruiting employees for Junkature.
Do you think other companies and other leaders could take a lead from your own book in terms of how people are hired? Or are people hired the completely wrong way in general?
I don't know. I haven't read a CV now in 3 years. I asked them a question. Then, if we agree on that, I asked them the next question. Then, tell me what you love to do, right? And I'm going to give you a story now, because this girl got me down to her house, right, to have a chat. She was looking for an internship, right? And it's Stephen Kenny's daughter, the guy manages Ireland. So this girl sent me a message. I want to chat to you, an internship or whatever. And we were to meet for coffee, and then she got delayed or something. So I had to stop off anyway. And so I went in and I asked her the question, tell me what you love doing. So she gave me a sales pitch, right, about some old thing and whatever. And you didn't answer my question. It took an hour now, right? So at the end of the hour, she eventually got out and she said, Jesus, but you're not going to want this. And I go, but all I want to know is what you love doing. And she said, I love selling stuff. You know what? I love a good presentation. I love selling stuff, right? And then I went, but you've tried to sell me since I came in the door. And you won't let me out the door till I buy. So what you actually love doing is what you're actually good at. You know, and we hired her. We're putting her on our partnership team now, right? And what I've heard from the team, sometimes when they come back to them, these people, they go, where'd you get this one from? No CV. I don't know anything about her. But she pitched me, right? And I remember my COO coming to me after a month going, man, that gear can sell stuff. And I, you know, and it's funny, like, but that's the way. Now, it's working, gear. I can't say it's for everybody, right? But when I look back in the accountancy thing for me and Joe Carnan's, I wasn't happy because I wasn't doing something I was happy at. So I was making mistakes. So at the end of the day, if I was put doing something I was happy at and I fit at the culture, then you don't have to follow that person. That person will just excel. Because if you do something that you love doing, you'll never work a day in your life. And nobody have to come on your back and go, you have to go there the day, get this done, get this done. So that's my natural thinking of it now. We'll see in a couple of years if it's a success or not.
What's your vision for Junkature long term?
That is built out of this idea of enriching and empowering the lives of young people. That, when I go back to that why, every one of those kids was me on stage. So for me, the goal was to reach 1 billion young people. That was it. We've gone into 6 countries now, with 7 more next year, is 13. They're particularly picked to allow us to access 1 billion young people. At the moment, it's accessible to 1 million young kids around the world, which is a milestone we achieved just in the last month. 1 billion's a big number. It's going to take a lot of effort. But I think, like, in the same terms as soccer or GA has longevity, sport has a massive longevity.
It's going to take effort. It's also going to take money. And I suppose it brings me on to the crowdfunding and how that program and plan's going for you.
Yeah, so at the moment, we're up on the Cedars platform and Cedars.com. We're looking to raise €1 million. We're around the 90% mark at the minute. It's €20. And you can, it's not a donation. This is becoming part of a movement. This is owning shares in a movement. This has also got the opportunity to return money, because while Junkature is both a social impact business helping young people and the planet, you know, we drive revenues and we have a massive ambition for revenues. I think the biggest thing for us is this media rights. As I talked about sport earlier on, I mean, the pinnacle is the Premier League. $50 million an hour the Premier League drives in TV revenues globally. I mean, $1 million an hour to me would be worth $80 million a year. That's on the small side of it. I have a bigger ambition than that, but if I can get $1 million an hour, I'm happy at this stage.
You're off on your travels at the weekend. Can you tell me where you're going and what the plans are?
I'm in Abu Dhabi this week. I am actually talking at the World Creative Conference. It's part of Expo 2020. They're hosting it this year. So I have a lot of meetings in Abu Dhabi because we have an ongoing negotiation with them around partnership and a city project that we have going out there, but that's next week. And then January and February will be New York, LA, and probably back to Abu Dhabi again. It's mad now at the minute, but it's a struggle with family, because the thing that we realise here is I want to bring them with me. And my daughter at the minute has gone through the transfer test here, which has got her tied to Derry for a month. Next year we have to look at where that all leads and where it goes.
How is Junkature structured at the minute? You mentioned a team of about 20. Who's at the top under yourself, and what jobs are involved in the various parts of the business?
So I'm the CEO, and then there's a senior management team of 4 people. So I have Justin Cullen, who would have been the chief digital officer at Core Media in Dublin, $200 million Euro media company in Dublin. He exited that 2 years ago. Diane Roberts is my COO. That's a woman I met 6 years ago, and I described her as the woman who made me squirm every time I met her. She's got a brilliant bullshit meter, and that's brilliant for me in that job. You can't get one past Diane at all. We recently hired this lady, and this was a thing because our show, the first TV show we went out on RT last year, we were up against MasterChef, and I remember MasterChef did 2% market share and we did 16% market share, and the lady that was the head of MasterChef wanted to know who beat them, and she just couldn't get over what we were doing and where we were going. And now this woman has worked in Big Brother, Peaky Blinders, The Muppets, Transformers. I mean, it was just inning and TV. I couldn't believe it. And within 3 months, she'd invested and taken a role, and she's now global content officer. And it's her leading these media rights, because I didn't have a clue about media rights, to be honest with you. But she's these relationships with Amazon Prime and Netflix and so on. It's her leading the charge on that side. And it's unreal when you can see that level of an executive, because we're all learning from her. You know, I mean, she's been there and worn the T-shirt on so many projects over the year. Big Brother, I mean, if you go back when that started, it was a huge global phenomenon. So, you know, she's helped us massively with that. And then under that, then we have senior VPs. And there's a couple of Buncrana people in that. There's the two Kellys from Buncrana, Megan and Rory. Brilliant people, I have to say. And then it goes down then. I mean, there's five or six ones that are under 30, because it's key to me that we're in the right demographic. But one thing I do want to say is we are 4 men and 16 women, which is really unusual, I think. So, because Rory now, and one some of those team meetings, Rory's the only guy, and there'd be 7 or 8 young women. But one thing I'd like to say is, because I read, you know, I read about pay gaps and all this here thing, like, we never had that, right? We also have this policy, right, as part of this culture, because it's the way I am. If my daughter isn't well today, I'm not focused on work. So we have this policy in work where family comes first. So if that's, you finish with your boyfriend, you're not feeling well, your son needs something, they just need you, right? There's no sick leave. We just pay. And you can take whatever time you need. I have somebody off in long COVID. Whatever you need, we're there. We're part of your family.
And how is that working for you?
Do you know what the start? Some people said to me, that's mad. It's actually been fantastic. And, you know, they send little texts going, you know, my son needs to go to get something for school. I'm okay. And I'm like, you don't need to ask. But it's actually driven so much respect and trust between everybody. And then I'm reading, you know, things about paternity leave and maternity leave and all. And I'm going, how are people just bringing this in? So we've been that kind of an organization from the start. It is a case of if somebody needs support, right, let's support them. What do they need? If somebody needs time off, they're off. Somebody needs to fill that role. And we describe it as a team. Like, I love sports now, right? I'm a big soccer fan. Liverpool's a big thing. And I would say to them the same. I see Jurgen Klopp on there and he's hugging the team. He's supporting the guys. And it's when people are quiet, they might need somebody to ring them up and say, what's going on? It is very much a thing about we support you. And you know this, it has worked massively in my favour. And I think that's a big thing, that this culture, when I defined it. Because I know if something's wrong with Paris or Ali tomorrow, I'm not, how am I going to focus? I need to be here, not in work. So I'm not going to function right anyway.
So you mentioned long COVID, and just go back to 2018, which was a significant turning point and where you've come to now. The pandemic followed in early 2020. Did that help or hinder your plans for expansion with Junkature?
Do you know it helped massively? Right? We'll go back to the MIT thing again. One of the lectures at MIT is around this idea of exploding your business. Right? And so this guy talks about his own experience. His business literally did explode, right? And he lost everything. But he said what happens is when something like that happens, you come up with your best decisions when your back's against the wall, and then you consider things that you would have never considered, right? So when COVID came in, I remember having a team meeting. Now, there was three of them at the time on a call, and I said, guys, you know, 3 months, show was cancelled, and I said, right, we need a solid line. So the solid line we're going to pick is we're going to say no events for 18 months. And I remember the Rory going to me, geez, man, this is only 3 months. Like, you know, electric picnic's going ahead. And I go, we don't know what's going to happen. Let's call it for 18 months. We have a great excuse here now, right? And we're going to blow up our business. And we watched the lecture together. The MIT provide copies of the lecture. And I said, right, our back's against the wall. We have no other thing. How are we going to do what we wanted to do? And I have to say now, in three weeks, they had set up a whole digital activation. Before, we were talking about we were going to fly teams to New York, teams to Paris and all. COVID allowed us to do it digitally. So all of a sudden, Katie was doing webinars with people in New York. Rory was connecting schools into her. Megan was working out another plan to get here. So it actually helped us massively accelerate and also keep the business lean, because one of the things with this type of company is it needs a lot of capital usually to start. And like one of the business plans I would follow is Formula E. And I tell my team this story, right? A guy called Alejandro Agag started that company, and he tells the story about at the start he raised money for one car, then he raised money to do three races, right? But three races, he couldn't sell that to any broadcaster. So he sold them 10 races, knowing that he only could pay for three. And he tells the story of getting on the plane to the third race in Miami, and he owed $25 million, right, for the other races, because he couldn't pay for them, but he owed $25 million for them, and he had 100 grand in the bank, right? And at that race, he signed Liberty Global, who would have owned Formula One and Ticketmaster and all, to take on and fund them other races. So, but it's the capital needed for those big type things. This isn't something you have to go and do 10 races. I have to go and do 13 shows. If I want to do a world tour, I have to do all 13. I can't do two. Nobody wants to buy two. So that is when I looked at it back in 2019, we were going to look to raise 10 million. Now it's a case of we can do so much activation digitally. Schools are much more open to webinars. I was on a webinar the other night with the UK. There was 100 schools signed up for that webinar. I think 78 turned up. But 78, I would have had to fly people in around all those schools before. You know, they wouldn't have been used to so much with Zoom and all. Now that's accepted. So that helped massively. I think COVID, we don't say COVID was a gift. We say the lockdown was a gift.
Tell me, Troy, what do you like most about being your own boss?
It's not nice. There's days, it's not true. On Tuesday, I went to Kelly Beggs. I haven't been to Kelly Beggs in a long time. I went to Kelly Beggs and I went down and went into Eamon McHugh first. And he made me soup. Right? Having the great soup. And then I went to meet Grattan Butler. They're opening a new office in Donegal Town, Darren Barry, and chat a couple of tea with them. I love people mixing. Right, I love getting out and chatting to people, and I suppose that's true. As your own boss, you get to kind of define that. Now, there's, you know, yesterday was a tough day. Then Tuesday was a great day. Tuesday night, if you'd chatted to me, I was like, oh, I'm taking over the world, right? If you'd have chatted to me last night, I was going, close the door. I'm not going back out again. You know, and what people don't see, I suppose, sometimes is it's a roller coaster. You know, and there's things that come at you from left field that you don't expect. It's mad. You know, you think times, I've got this nailed. I remember actually when I was doing accountancy, he got everybody out to learn to play golf, right? And it was a disaster. I'm not sporty. But there'd be nights there, I remember with a 7-iron, and you just hit it right. And God, she would sail up, right? And you go, geez, I'm getting on to this. And the next 10 will be crash and burn. So it's a bit like that. You can, Tuesday was a great day. Wednesday was a disaster. Jury's out on Thursday yet. But I really enjoy seeing things come together. An idea that you have that's mad, right? Coming and working. And I do love the people that I meet and the rooms I get into. It's been fantastic that way.
What's the best lesson that you've learned in your business life?
God, tough question. I think the biggest thing for me now, and I, my wife will argue with me that I work 120 hours a week, because I wouldn't say I work 100, but the biggest lesson I learned was this, is it's like any resource. You have 100 hours in a week. It's what you put the focus on. So, like, because I see now, even on a team of 20, oh, so many great ideas.
Are you better focused now than you were before?
Aye. Oh, definitely. Once you get down to a fine point, because one of the decisions in 2018 too was I could run four companies. That's nuts. So no.
Talk to me about the company that you sold off.
Yeah, so Workhouse started because I needed an agency for Junketure, and I started off with two people, and then I needed them for 3 months. So then I started selling their services, and we'd grown to £1 million turnover and 20 people in a very short time. But part of that 2018 process with me was, I realised the band had to go, because I couldn't do a band. I couldn't do Workhouse as well. And in fairness, like, the management bought that out. Like, I had another offer, but the management team believed in it, and they bought me out from that. But I had to start to unwind from those things and go, what is my focus going to be? And now I would be very tuned into, especially when team members do come up with brilliant ideas, I go, but hold on a second. you know, 20 of us times 40, you've an 800-hour resource in a week. How much of that resource are we going to put into that new brilliant idea out there? We need to keep this 800 focused on the journey we're going on. You know, those things that can all happen in the future, but if we don't nail these milestones, and I'd say to anybody tomorrow starting any company, focus is the thing for me that it's taking me out of the hustle, put it like that.
Is there a person in business that you admire most?
Oh, I've come across so many. It's not going to be anybody exotic, to be honest with you. A guy that made a big impression on me is a guy called Warren Rustand. I met him in 2016. I was at an event in Dublin. He was an American who, multi-billionaire. He worked for one of the presidents. He was in the Olympics. He'd done so many things. But the first thing he said when he stood up was, the number one thing in my life is my family. The number two thing is my business. And I always used to think that was the opposite way around. And then I often thought too, if you said that out loud, people go, that guy's not interested really in business. But he had a profound effect on me now, that guy, and I get to talk to him every so often because I did mail him after that and he mentors me in different things. But he's a great book about how you design your life, and it's worth reading.
We talked a good bit about your past and your youth. What advice would you give your 21-year-old self?
Loosen up a bit. I was a stiff accountant, I'll tell you. I took myself far too seriously. I believe this, and I tell this to people. I'm 46 now, but I left that accountancy office 21 on the outside and 40 years old on the inside. It took a long time to unwind that seriousness. I remember Joe Carlin giving me advice the day I came in to ask him, could I get the job? And he said, man, go off to college and get drunk. What do you want to work in here for? And I said, but I don't drink. I've changed that now since. So, but I didn't realize what college was about. It's not about the books and all. It's about life and growing up and learning for yourself and all the rest of it. And I didn't see that. I just thought it was going to be more of secondary school. So I aged too much in that accountancy thing. And that's then when I came out of that, had to undo all that. And I could make silly mistakes and you run around doing the wrong things. And we all did them. And then at some point in your life, you kind of go, right, I have a purpose. What's it about? And I suppose that's kind of where I'm at now.
What do you do to unwind?
I love roller coasters, even though I hate them. I'm afraid of heights and all the rest of it. I force myself to go on them. It's a way of me releasing tension. So I try to do that whenever I can. COVID hasn't helped with that. But I'm a big Liverpool fan now. I loved that match last night. That was a great unwind. I try to get there if I can. And then I love gigs. So I would, like Coldplay are playing next year, Westlife are playing next year, U2, I mean, I've followed U2 around the world many times, Coldplay the same, and I love that idea of getting to 80,000 people and just losing yourself, you know, and leaving all that stress there. So I see Junketure, well, it's like my ultimate hobby. Like, it's got all those elements, it's got the rock and roll, and, you know, yesterday they sent me a video because for this speech thing in Abu Dhabi next week, they're making a little video for me. And it was brilliant now, right? And there was a highlight moment in it because there's a guy who has autism who's in Junketure last year and this year. And last year, he didn't speak. And I remember his teacher telling us, you know, he doesn't speak. And this year, in this video, he's on a microphone talking to one of our presenters. And it just struck me when I saw it. But with the music and the lights and all, I just went back to the guys and just said, that's rock and roll. That's what I love about this. The video's brilliant. Because it is. And I suppose it keeps all those elements of the gigs and all that I love. I get to do it myself. So the closest thing for me to being on stage, I can't get up and be Bono. But I can just sit in the scene and pretend.
And finally, Troy, what lies ahead for yourself and your business?
It's we're in this crossroads moment, because I've said to you now, me and my wife have been chatting about this. Ultimately, the year after next, Junket Chair becomes a 13-city tour, January to August. Life isn't going to be the same. I don't know if Derry fits in there or not. We're moving to Madrid in January for 6 months to see how that goes. My wife from Madrid. And beyond that, it's where in the world do we go? Paris is my daughter. She needs schooling. Can she be schooled on the road? So that's where the personal life is. The business, I'm really enjoying it at the minute. The team around me are fantastic. It's great working with creative people, because every day you don't know what they're going to produce. And when you get a video like that yesterday, you just say the world's great. And then the same today, that the little guy from Abu Dhabi, the 8-year-old who made the video, you just go, wow. So that's great. Those moments, you have them every day. I'm determined to get to this 1 billion young people. I'm determined to leave the world this legacy. And I want to say this one thing now, right? Because this, sometimes people don't get this. But if I walked into you 120 years ago, Kieran, right? And I said, I've got this idea for a sport. And 30 men are going to run around a field after a bag of wind. And 80,000 people are going to cheer them on. And people are going to watch on TV. Not only that, they're going to buy the same clothes they wear, right? You're going to go, ah, you're cracked, man. But that's the All-Ireland final, described like as it would be 120 years ago. And that's where I see Junket Chair is now. I see in 120 years' time, this will be one of the biggest sports in the world. And I say to people, it'll be bigger than Formula One. It's because it belongs in every school. There's creative kids in every school. And every year they get better and they compete with each other and they come out and show the world what they can do. That's the legacy I think this will be.
Troy Ormer, CEO of Junket Chair. Thank you very much for joining us on Business Matters.
Thanks, Kieran. Great to chat to you.
Well, that's it for this edition of Business Matters. Thanks to my guest, Troy Armour. Thanks to Kenneth Wilson on sound. And thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, drop an email to businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Business Matters, in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Do you want to learn how to tap into unprecedented opportunities in the food and drink industry? Then join our higher diploma in Food Product Innovation and Enterprise. This course is 100% online and co-funded by Donegal Local Enterprise Office. Visit lyit.ie for more information.